on the wild card line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Here again, I am. My guests are Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, and Richard Hoagland. The subject is the Sphinx, Giza, in Egypt. Robert Bovall and Graham Hancock were without ceremony booted off Giza recently. They believe the opening of the Sphinx has been canceled. Richard Hoagland has new information. We're going to continue with this discussion in a moment. The cast of characters includes the man with the money, Mr. Shore, and, of course, the Egyptian government, and the curator and the caretaker of all of that ancient knowledge awaiting to be opened. And one must wonder if all of this perhaps might not boil down to Mr. Hancock, Mr. Bovall, Mr. Hoagland, and other Americans and Germans and others are simply not going to be welcome when this ancient artifact is opened. We'll find out.
Crop circles, alien autopsies, viruses, politics, the supernatural, all this and more is covered in the Art Bell After Dark newsletter. Every month, the latest pictures and lots of information is specially edited for listeners of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell and Dreamland. To subscribe, credit card customers call 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. A one-year subscription, $39.95. 2 years, $74.90, and $109.85 for 3 years. Price is $5 a year higher in Canada. Call today, 1-800-917-4278.
Back now to Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall and Richard Hoagland, and you're all back on the air again, gentlemen. Could there be anything to what I just said? In other words, all of this that you have related thus far seems to lead me toward believing, and I'm just an outsider, that perhaps those who guard the antiquities want themselves the general credit for the opening and don't want any foreigners involved. Could that be?
Well, I mean, yes, we're beginning to sense that something of that nature is involved. Certainly with the latest development, for a senior Egyptian official who is the director general of the Giza Plateau to actually state on the air that he has canceled the license of the Florida State University and Dr. Shore, and to hear otherwise from the team itself, that suggests to me that they would go to such lengths in Egypt, or at least that man, Dr. Zahi Hawass, would go to such lengths to blur and smoke screen the whole issue.
So, Robert, I think you put your finger on exactly what's going on. Let me read you a fax that's come in here. When Art and I do shows like this, you know, we basically have a country listening to us, and we have a lot of sources out there that feed us information either through the internet, which is up live tonight, or directly through the fax machines here. Let me read you what just came in. And the individual who sent me this wants to remain anonymous, so I'm going to respect those wishes. But let me quote you from the part that I can read. The real reason I am faxing you, my sources, this individual says, in the Foreign Service, have been following your work, meaning here at Enterprise, and Hancock et al. Very intently. They tell me the story behind the cover-up is twofold. Islamic fundamentalism will possibly bring the Egyptian government down if Western influence appears to be growing, especially concerning sites which may contradict holy knowledge. That's the parallel with the extraordinary debacle going on in Israel right now. Okay?
Right.
B, this individual says, Jewish leaders also don't want any prior civilizations revealed. C, Christian leaders are the most paranoid about this. The real power structures that try to control much of the planet, knowledge, science, economics, etc., already know and or suspect what is likely in there, just as they strongly suspect that what you are saying is also right on. And I think that particular individual has encapsulated a very important aspect of this, which is we are discussing real knowledge transformation. If, as we all agree, Graham, Robert, Art, me, that whatever is found there will change the paradigm if it is honestly pursued because of good work which has been done by many people over the years to bring us to this point, then that knowledge alone, if handled in an irresponsible manner in some person's perceptions, and I'll come back to that in a minute, could destabilize entire governments. Again, look at CNN, what's going on in Israel right as we are speaking. Now, by irresponsible handling, obviously those in power think that those out of power don't know what they're doing. So there's an extraordinary conservatism on the part of governments, on the part of, you know, people leading institutions to try to control and maintain control of knowledge, particularly knowledge which has potential for radical transformation. What I think is happening, and this is now a speculation, I think for Egyptian consumption, there are political statements being made in Egypt, even as we speak, by certain, appointed representatives. Dr. Hawass would fall into that category, that may not accord strictly with the facts as they are looked at in a broader context. In other words, Western influences, Western technology, licenses being given and all that. And since you're dealing with a very controlled media environment at home in Egypt, these statements, by and large, will be taken at face value by the populations to which they are intended. In other words, gentlemen, we are dealing with geopolitics on an international and potentially larger level.
Richard, can I come in a minute?
Absolutely.
And I must say that I'm very pleased that we teamed up in April and May in England, because I began to realize that we, as people who are investigating this from the outside, have looked upon the situation, myself with being in Egypt and trying to find out from Dr. Hawass himself and the Egyptian authorities what is going on. And thank goodness, with your contact that you've made with Dr. Shaw and Boris Said, at least to know from this end, what is the score? I have a feeling now that you're far more informed than us concerning the Shaw Foundation's work there and their collaboration with Boris Said and the Florida State. But, I mean, what are they hoping to find? I mean, can we tell this to our listeners? I mean, at this stage.
This is what I asked tonight. I specifically asked Boris and through him, Joe Shore, what it is that I can say regarding our conversations. And they basically gave me carte blanche to say anything I want. So let me try to, you know, work through this and bring everyone up to speed at the
very
same
good.
Time.
Yes. We're all ears here, Richard.
Well, As I told you when I talked to you after my five-hour meeting, what impressed me about Joe Shore is he was a scientist. He had yellow pads. He took copious notes. I shared a lot with him freely. In fact, I opened my conversation with him by saying, I'm not here to get anything. I am here to provide you with information that there has been a high-level, how should I use the term, interest on the part of the United States government in what is under the plateau and in the pyramids at Egypt, and I can prove it from our NASA investigation. And I laid out for him, with the, you know, portable laptop computer that I have with me, the same kind of evidence that I have shared with you, Graham, when I sent you those FedEx packets in Washington several weeks ago, mm-hmm. and a similar packet to you, Robert, in England several weeks ago. And that evidence was so compelling that Joe Shore immediately set in motion certain discussions involving how we can calibrate the accuracy of what is found under these rooms and in these chambers under the plateau.
Excuse me, Richard. Can you, for the sake of the audience, lay that evidence out?
What you did send?
Not without a great deal of background and digression. So for the time being, the audience will just have to believe that we're all in agreement that it's pretty important. In fact, it was so interesting that I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, that you, Robert, and Graham decided to write the three-section article for the Daily Mail based in part on the evidence we provided.
The article in the Daily Mail was the issue of possible signs of life in a meteorite from Mars.
Indeed, and following the conferences that we had with you in the UK and England, Richard, I must admit that although we were rather novices on the subject at the time, I have been very, very convinced that there is a lot to investigate here, and that you've done a great service in bringing this to the attention of the public.
We're referring to your work on Mars.
But could you please carry on with this meeting with Dr. Shore that you've had? I mean,
they must in 5 hours have told you what they were looking for, and since they've given you carte blanche, please share it with us and the audience.
Well, what Dr. Shore, admitted to me, as well as he admitted to you, that is, he got very interested in all this because of the Casey prophecies and the astronomical correlations, and in fact, he would hope that if he is allowed to proceed without censorship and without fetters and in a kind of an investigation that we would all approve of, that he could potentially confirm a very ancient set of artifacts under the plateau that date back to the magical 10,500 or earlier time frame. He was very open in terms of admitting that that's what he hopes might be found, provided he goes through the proper protocols and satisfies an awful lot of political problems that have to be met when you're doing anything in Egypt.
But this is where we strike a little problem, because when we did suggest that we would inform the public of an investigation to look for chambers under the Sphinx, we were told by Dr. Shore himself in a written fax to us that what he was doing there was to look for chasms and faults.
He said he was concerned about tourists falling through holes in the ground and felt that it was necessary to prospect for faults under the Giza Plateau. You have to remember this is a plateau with 15 million tons of pyramids on it, and we don't know of people falling through holes in the ground. But one of the things that he specifically threatened to sue us for was mentioning his connection with the Casey Foundation. So we're very, very amazed to hear what you're telling us, Richard.
Why do you think that position was taken? Is it because Dr. Zahi Hawass had put pressure on...
I think it has to do with domestic politics in Egypt and the sincere difficulty with Islamic fundamentalism and the things we're seeing going on in Israel. There is a very serious problem. And Robert, you, having lived there, know that this is not... We're not just making this up. There are officials who are concerned for their very lives if there is a perception that discoveries are coming out that contradict, as my faxing friend here says, holy knowledge and perceptions of these as they currently exist. And it's this potential for a paradigm shift of stunning proportions that I think has made everyone in the Middle East, particularly around the plateau now, extremely nervous about Western journalists, Western discussions, the idea of openness in the press, the First Amendment. And I think that Dr. Shore, this is now a speculation, I think that he was trying to placate political forces in Egypt when he did not have...
Well, Richard, excuse me, I may obviously sound very, very naive here, but I believe that with monuments of the importance of these, which are, I repeat, a legacy for the whole of mankind, it is important for people not only to say things openly, but also to do things openly, and most important, that they don't say one thing publicly and do another thing privately. Our whole campaign has been for the public to be fully informed about this matter.
Well, let me continue with this meeting, because at the meeting, you and Robert came up, because I brought you up very forcefully and very specifically with Rory Milliken as my witness. And what
Rory Milliken is the representative of the Canadian government.
The Canadian government rep, yes.
He was there at the meeting.
He was at the meeting, yes.
Good.
What I said was that I saw myself in a position to provide information I thought would be important for Dr. Shore in his investigations. because of the high-level connections between this government, the American government, and Egypt that can be proven now through the NASA connection, up to and including certain NASA personnel that were pivotally important. You know, there's a key Egyptian whose name I don't really want to mention a lot tonight, who shows up first.
Well, let's share that with the public, Richard.
Well, because I don't...
I think you're referring to Farouk Elbaz, are you not?
Well, I would not have done that, Graham, and I wish you
would
do that.
Oh, why not? I thought we were trying to share this with the public.
This is my information, and I will share exactly politically what is important to move this ball down the field.
Yeah, go on, Richard, go on.
Well, now that you have mentioned his name, this individual turns out to have a very, very important lineage out of Egypt. His father was a renowned Egyptologist. He goes to university in Europe. He then shows up in the United States in the 1960s. He becomes attached to the NASA program, winds up being pivotal in the site selection of the landing sites on the moon and the landing sites of the unmanned spacecraft on Mars. He then leaves NASA and goes into the private university system. In fact, he's at Boston University, just down the hall from Robert Schoch.
I understand that he founded the remote sensing institute at Boston, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Right.
He then shows up in a 1987 expedition back to Egypt, ostensibly looking at the second solar boat pit with Apollo lunar NASA technology, and a couple of astronauts came with him. He then shows up, the same individual, as being placed in charge of opening the room at the end of the shaft leading out toward the southern sky and Sirius from the Queen's Chamber.
You're absolutely right, and this is where we were stunned, in that this statement was made in the Egyptian press in March of this year by Dr. Zahi Hawass himself, who, as I understand, is a very, very good and personal friend of Dr. Farouk Elbaz.
Well, Dr. Elbaz, I was able to demonstrate to Joe Shore, is a pivotal figure connecting the NASA evidence we have of its extraordinary and sustained interest in Egypt, in Egyptian mythology, in the constellations of Osiris, Orion, Sirius, Canis Major, Aldebaran, Taurus, that whole Duat region of the sky shows up not only in key NASA documentation relating to the space program, but in terms of personnel connecting Egypt and the American space program. And when I laid all this out to Joe Shore, my reason for doing it was to basically say, look, Joe, we're all playing in a sandbox where there have been lots of other people before us with much higher power and connections and agendas that we are not aware of. Be careful. And he has apparently taken that dictum to heart. And one of the things he has done is to invite me to be present. And the other thing he did at my urging was to tender an invitation to you gentlemen to have a private meeting with him. And I know that the substance of that meeting was to discuss how you can be present also when these investigations are pursued on the plateau.
I would like to state immediately in response to that, Richard, that we cannot be party to anything about which the public is not fully informed. That may be naive, it may not be geopolitical, but we think that absolute honesty and openness and public accountability are essential in this matter.
All right, gentlemen, let's hold it right there. It's obvious where we're going from there, at least it is to me. And so we'll pick up on that exact point when we come back. I'm Art Bell. This is the CBC Radio Network. Don't forget, we're going to Egypt next year. If you want to be part of it and come along, if you're on the East Coast, call 800-624-7779. Midwest, 800-633-2732. In the West, 800-848-7120. 9 a.m. Sunday or 8 a.m. Monday morning. We'll be right back.
This is Talk Radio Network.
listening to an encore performance of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. This program is aired live Monday through Friday from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. in the Pacific time zone and 2 a.m. to 7 a.m. in the Eastern. Please contact your local radio listings to confirm the exact times Art Bell airs live in your area. And now, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
This is the CBC Radio Network.
It is, and this may be about, maybe all about where we started from. All of us. That's what we're talking about. What may lie between the Sphinx, beneath the Sphinx. It may have to do with our origins. It is a non-trivial issue. Discussing it, Graham Hancock, Robert Bevall in Delaware, and Richard Hoagland in Manhattan. And we'll get back to them in a moment. Select antenna is the best way to improve reception. To Egypt, to the pyramids, to the Sphinx, to Jerusalem, to Haifa, to the Greek islands, to Italy, to Pompeii, to the Isle of Capri is booking quickly, and we would love to have you come along. Come along with us. They will send you free information. You can call Sunday at beginning at 9 a.m. in the morning or Monday morning at 8 o'clock Pacific time, all times Pacific. Here are the numbers. Please make note of them. And don't delay. The bookings and the reservations are a fixed number, finite number. So you've got to act early. I urge you. Call, they'll send you free information on this incredible cruise on the MS Mazdan. If you're in the eastern part of the U.S., call 800-624-7779. 800-624-7779. Midwest, call 800-633-2732. If you're on the West Coast, including Alaska and Hawaii, call 800-848-7120. 800-848-7120. Back now to Graham Hancock, Robert Bevall in Delaware, and Richard Hoagland in Manhattan. And I believe that, Graham, you were just saying you could be not part of any expedition in which the American public was not fully informed, or the world, really.
The public of the world has to be fully informed on this matter. We see no excuse, justification, or reason for secrecy, whether on the grounds of geopolitics or any other form of politics. This is about human knowledge. It's the most sacred issue in the world. And what has been the tragedy of this site over more than the last 20 years has been the secrecy, the double standards, the dishonesty of information that has been presented to the public by many different parties concerned with the Giza Necropolis. And what Robert and I are trying to do is to shed some honest light on this matter and bring the facts before the public. And therefore, we can't be part of anything which does not involve that.
And I'm sure Richard is still here.
I'm here, yes, of course,
yes,
I'm here.
That, you know, and hence the reason why we sided with you in London and Leeds, Richard, is very much your long-standing campaign to have the matter concerning the Sidonia Enigma, the Mars monument issue, brought to the public in an open way. We believe that you and us stand for the same thing. And at this stage, I think that we hope that you'll support this openness.
Well, I do
indeed,
support.
I'm very, very pleased that you've had this carte blanche statement by Joe Shore to let us know what went on.
Let me carry on for five hours.
You must have discussed.
Right.
I mean,
let me make a couple of
more
points
about it.
One of the things that I was apprehensive of concerning conversations that you and I had in England is that that there would be some kind of documents that I would be asked to sign or agreements I would be asked to make that would curtail the freedom of inquiry, Graham, that I totally concur should be a part of any investigation of something of this nature. And I am very pleased to report tonight that there have been absolutely zero conditions attached to my involvement, participation, witnessing, presence, broadcasting live from the plateau of whatever I see, or in terms of discussions and looking at evidence prior to the actual opening that we are supposed to be, you know, involved in at some level prior to my going or what I do when I get there. And if there had any conditions, if I had been asked to sign documents, for instance, not acknowledging that, you know, I've been a strong supporter of John Anthony West, I extraordinarily acknowledge that his historical perspective in all this and his place in history for having had the tenacity for 15 years to pursue the truth that ultimately wound up with real serious geological redating of the Sphinx itself with the assistance of Bob Schock and others. And if I've been asked to sign a document, you know, claiming that I don't know John, I obviously wouldn't have signed it.
All right, Richard, I asked Graham and Robert about John Anthony West, why he was given the big boot. Now let me ask you, why?
Well, I have some personal knowledge here, and I don't want to tell tales out of school, so I'm going to frame my words very carefully. And Graham, please allow me to frame my own words, okay? John is...
I can't frame your words for you, Richard.
Thank you, thank you. John,
your own
is,
voice.
John, we all know that John is... Has
no,
anybody
don't
ever,
frame our thoughts for us. You just frame your words, Richard.
Has anyone here heard of a hair shirt? Do you know what a hair shirt...
No, don't ask questions. Just make, you're going to make an opinion. Please state it.
Well, John tends to rub people the wrong way sometimes. He is extremely direct, sometimes to the point of being overly direct, and at times he is extraordinarily undiplomatic.
Well,
and I know
frankly,
from personal knowledge
the trait that we actually like about
John.
Yeah,
we really admire that in John, the openness and the honesty and the fearlessness in defending principle and truth.
Well, but in this case, what John did was not defend principle and truth. He took a very direct personal shot at Zahi Hawass when Dr. Hawass was down. And without going into great detail, Zahi Hawass, because of this, developed an extraordinary personal animosity. This is at the level, Art, of a food fight at you know, some level between John West and Zahi Hawass.
Personalities.
Personality. Extraordinary personality problems occasioned because of both individuals who are very strong-willed, and you know them both, right, gentlemen?
Yeah, but
the fact is,
you're aware. I've shown you the documents.
The fact is that when that Rubicon was crossed, when John West, for whatever reason, and I know, Robert, you urged him not to do that, you counseled him to be far more diplomatic, when he took those steps, he basically, cut himself off by his own choice and own action. Because the reaction on the other side, where opinions and attitudes and emotions are very strongly held in the Middle East, was violent and flung back in his face, so to speak.
What I urged them not to do was to take a position that would cause a confrontation with Joe Shore at the time. But John,
well, he took on Joe Shore after
man,
this
you know,
personal thing with Zahi Hawass. The point is that, you know, I cannot agree with what John did, but I can totally support his investigation, his right to history, and his right to be acknowledged as a leader in opening this whole situation so that we can have this discussion.
Richard, can I just say this? I mean, what you said about Dr. Hawass's attitude to John West is absolutely correct, but he's not the only one who has suffered from this almost paranoid attitude that Hawass has demonstrated concerning all these affairs. We've had the same thing with the German robotic engineer Rudolf Ganterbrink, who has been very much abused by Dr. Hawass in certain statements.
Well, see, I don't know Ganterbrink. I do know John.
Well, John West was not the only one who was involved with the Sphinx project that took place in 1990. There's been heavy abuse on the credibility of Robert Schock, for example. So John West, in a sense, is one of the persons who has suffered from the virulent attacks from Hawass, and now we find ourselves in the same boat.
Frankly, these personal games and animosities are not something that anybody should pander to. I think it's important to come back to the basic issue that we're dealing with monuments of extraordinary importance, which should not be subjected to such petty and vile behavior on the part of the authorities responsible for them.
I totally agree, Graham, and unfortunately we're dealing with human beings and they sometimes don't live up to their higher principles and aspirations.
Well, you're then arguing for real politics on this, are you?
No, what I'm arguing for is I, for some reason, and I am quite mesmerized by this, have been tendered an invitation to be present when something important may go down.
Well, if that accords with your conscience and your feeling that it is good, then we suggest that you should go. But personally, I will not go under those circumstances.
Well, but the circumstances are there are no fetters.
But I will be able to clarify why Zahi Hawass is making public statements that this entire project does not exist anymore, whereas Joseph Shore, according to you, is making statements to you which you have been given carte blanche to broadcast that it is going ahead. This is a very bizarre contradiction, one of many contradictions surrounding these monuments which make it impossible for the public to know exactly what's going on.
Well, but the way they're going to know is if one of us or two of us or all of us are there to report.
Well, I think that it should not be a matter for us, actually. It should be a matter for the world's media to be present. I don't think Richard Hoagland is actually enough here. I think that we need the entire media of the world present every instant of this opening, and nothing less will do.
Well, I think that there are...
And I think you should insist on that, actually, Richard, since you seem to have so much influence with Joe Shore.
Say again?
I think you should insist on the media of the world being present.
Well, I think the media are going to be present. I mean, I must say
that this contradicts a statement that of another interview that was given by Zahi Hawass to an American network, an American... TV independent company. He was interviewed by Dave Bell.
Interviewed
with ABC,
him. Yeah.
And he actually said, Dr. Hawass actually said that he will not allow journalists at the Giza Plateau.
In fact, he said he won't allow journalists even into the pyramids, never mind under the Sphinx.
So, what's going on, Richard? I tend to believe that what Joseph Shore is saying is utterly correct. I'm very pleased that he has come out and has expounded to you his intentions, and he's decided to be totally open about this matter. We commend this, and we're fully behind this. What we are still puzzled is the contradiction of information at the most stunning and extraordinary level coming from Dr. Zahi Hawass himself on this matter. But can I return to this meeting that you've had with Dr. Shore?
Okay. Sorry, there's one. I have to say this. It's very important that people understand this, and I want to say this very, very strongly. This cannot be a private party at the Sphinx. This is a public affair, and it must involve the world media to the fullest extent possible. Richard Hoagland alone cannot represent the world public on this issue.
Well, Graham, I'm a little puzzled because you say I can't represent it alone, and I'm saying that Dr. Shore wants you to be there, and you say you can't be there.
I will be very happy to be there as long as the world's media is present. I don't want to play any part in a private party.
All right, let's find out how much media is invited. Richard, you alluded to me earlier in the day, alluded to the fact that somebody representing the Fox network, perhaps...
Well, there are several networks which are, in negotiation.
Okay. So
I can represent that. So let me say very specifically that Boris Said asked me tonight to have you call him, all right, at home to discuss your presence, Art Bell, on the plateau, representing the audience that's listening to us across America tonight.
All right, so I'm some...
What I am seeing... Let me interrupt.
Please. I'm some...
What I am seeing here is a pattern
Richard,
of...
Richard, hold on, Richard. I'm some media, and I'd be very pleased to be there. And we have a very good audience, but it is radio, and there needs to be more media there. Television... print journalists, and I think
it's
that's
important
what...
to understand that the invitation does have to come from the Egyptian government. Joe Shore or Boris Said, I'm afraid, are not in position to make invitations on behalf of the government of Egypt.
But they can intercede and represent in terms of good offices that individuals, media representatives, institutions,
can
and all
we
that.
Be a bit more, Richard, I'm Robert Bovar here. Can we be a bit more specific as to what exactly this invitation entails? You are invited, or whoever is invited,
to observe what exactly? What do you know about it?
Well, let me dig out my copy of the facts here. It says, and I will quote. Let me see. Where are we here? Okay. This is happy to confirm our invitation to join us on the plateau during the last week in October, the first week of November 96, when we hope to be opening the first of the underground chambers, which the Shore Expedition has discovered beneath the limestone of the Giza Plateau. Then he goes on and he says, as discussed,